Ma'am, does Randall Livermore live here?
Yes, but...
What's going on here, Laura?
A man's voice thundered from another room.
They say they're a policeman,
she faltered.
They're looking for Randy.
Immediately her husband appeared at her side.
What's this about?
He asked, tucking his shirt into his pajama bottoms. We have a search warrant, sir. You'll have to step aside. Stephen pushed into the house, followed closely by Detective Mark Rodriguez of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg PD and State Assistant District Attorney Liz Johnson. A shadow appeared at the top of the stairs, paused, then turned and fled back into one of the upstairs bedrooms. But Stephen had already seen him and taken the stairs two at a time, Rodriguez on his heels. Two more uniforms followed, weapons drawn.
What the hell is this all about?
Mr. Livermore shouted from the bottom of the stairs.
I'm calling my lawyer.
Stephen, Detective Rodriguez, and one of the uniforms were already engaged in the search when ADA Johnson entered the room, followed by Randy Livermore's parents. The other uniform stood next to Randy, who sat on the bed in his underwear, a general look of boredom on his face. Laura Livermore sat on the bed next to her son and put her arm around his shoulders. Her husband stood in the doorway, his arms tightly crossed.
What the hell is this all about?
He repeated, with significantly less bravado. You'll find the warrant in good order, sir, Detective Rodriguez told him quietly. Stephen looked over his shoulder and met Rodriguez's eyes with a nod. It was in good order. They'd waited all night, impatience building as Detective Rodriguez secured the warrant from a very particular judge. The judge hadn't wanted to grant the warrant, and finally did so, only with the stipulation they search for items obviously earmarked for Winters or one of his known aliases. Stephen hoped they got lucky. Sometimes God smiled. What's this? Stephen asked as he pulled an envelope from between two books of a stack of five textbooks. He looked over at the assistant DA. Does this fit the restrictions of the warrant? A longtime colleague who had earned his respect many times over, ADA Johnson had accompanied them specifically to ensure any results of this search would hold up in court. Stephen was determined that once they got Winters, justice would be served and not derailed because of any technical errors. Johnson lifted a brow.
I'd say so. Open it, Special Agent Thatcher.
Stephen opened the envelope, bearing the FedEx mailing label with one of the aliases they'd found in Winters' closet, as well as a downtown Chicago address. He glanced up to find Livermore's parents growing paler by the moment. Randall himself still looked bored. They'd see how bored he looked after a few nights in a holding cell, Stephen thought. The other inmates would manage to, stimulate him. Stephen dumped the contents of the envelope on the top of Randall's dresser. At least 30 pages spilled out, each page with a 3x5 laser-printed photograph dead center, and subject's name, address, and phone number just beneath. The subject of every photo was a woman. He blew out a low whistle. Look at this. Just take a look at all these.
Pictures,
Liz Johnson murmured, looking over his shoulder.
Was this what you were looking for, Stephen?
They'll do in a pinch, Stephen answered grimly. He looked over at the boy sitting on the bed, still in his underwear. How'd you get the names of these women, Randall?
Don't say anything, Randy, his father warned. Laura, call the lawyer. I want him here.
Stephen flipped through the photos, scanning each one. He passed one of the photos to the back of the pile when something clicked in his mind. Wait a minute. Slowly, Stephen pulled the photo back to the top, feeling the hum of excitement race along his skin. Older, darker hair, same eyes. It's her, he said, looking over at Detective Rodriguez. We've found her. Stephen looked down at the photo again, the tight fist around his heart loosening for the first time in 2 weeks. And we found her before he did. I need to call Lieutenant Spinelli up in Chicago and let him know so he can get a unit to her house in Warner. Mary Grace Winters. He held up the photograph with the picture of the woman who'd outsmarted them all and read the name beneath her picture. Caroline Stewart. Stephen turned abruptly and stared at the young man sitting on his bed, taking it all in with little to no visible emotion, and his temper cracked. "Do you know what you've done, Mr. Livermore?" he demanded. He bent over until he could see the striations in the boy's eyes. "Do you have any concept of what you've done?" The boy was quiet, his chin lifted just a fraction. "You little son of a bitch," Stephen said quietly, ignoring the outraged gasp from Mrs. Livermore. He held up the picture of Mary Grace Winters. "Look at this woman," he challenged in his most ominous voice. "Look at her carefully. Because if anything happens to this woman, I'll make sure you're charged as an accessory." Mr. Livermore smacked his hand against the wall, and everyone flinched.
"For the last time, I want to know what is going on here," he demanded, his face red with frustration.
Detective Rodriguez stepped forward. "It would appear your son has been engaging in a bit of extracurricular hacking, Mr. Livermore. He's been doing research for the subject of a manhunt, who's been searching for the woman in that photo. When we're done with your son, we'll hand him over to the feds." Rodriguez looked down at Randall. "Hacking is a federal crime. You did realize that, didn't you?" "Please stand up."
Rodriguez pulled out his cuffs. "Randall Livermore, you have the right to remain silent."
Chicago, Saturday, March 17th, 9:30 a.m.
"Max, stop it," Caroline muttered, swatting his hand away while trying to get her key in the lock on her front door. "Anybody could come by."
He moved his hand back under her sweater, unperturbed. "No, they won't. Mrs. Pulaski's in Daytona, remember? And Mr. Edelman's still trying to cough up his dentures after you surprised him by coming in this morning wearing the same thing you had on last night. You must not stay out all night very often," he added lightly. But she could hear an undertone of serious question. She turned to face him, leaning up on her toes to place a kiss on the side of his throat.
"You're the first."
The fierce hug he gave her confirmed she'd been right. This tall, dark, and gorgeous man was also vulnerable.
"Now I've got to go change my clothes, or you'll be late meeting Frank."
"It's your fault that we're late," Max remarked blandly just as she got the key in the lock. She glared at him over her shoulder.
"My fault?"
"Your fault." She opened the door, walked in, and dropped her purse on the sofa.
"How is it my fault? You started it. Just once more, you said. It'll only take a few minutes, you said."
His smile was only slightly superior. "You weren't complaining." Caroline grinned and shrugged out of her coat.
"No, I guess I wasn't."
Understatement of the day.
"I'll be back in a few minutes."
She jogged back to her bedroom and simultaneously kicked off her shoes and pulled her sweater over her head when she crossed over the threshold. She pulled on clean clothes and then stood at her dresser, staring at herself in the mirror. The woman who looked back was a joyful stranger, her eyes bright, her countenance glowing. Dana had told her it would be like this. The night before had been the most incredible experience of her life. And now she knew one night with Max Hunter would never be enough. She wanted it all over again. The intense pleasure of making love with him, to him, hearing that guttural moan when he climaxed. But even more, she wanted the sweet completion of lying in his arms, listening to his even breathing as he slept. Inevitably, he'd asked her to stay again tonight. She wanted to. She looked at herself in the mirror, biting her lower lip. She really, really wanted to. But was she that kind of woman? Caroline let out a shaky sigh, remembering every time he'd made her feel like she was flying, like she was reborn.
"What kind of woman am I?"
she asked herself, pulling her brush through her hair. The answer came quickly, bringing with it the heat of remembrance of each touch, each thrust of his body. She was the kind of woman who'd enjoyed every minute in her lover's arms. So would she stay with him tonight? when all was said and done, her answer would be yes. So should she just pack an overnight bag and be done with the decision already? Conscience nagged for a moment. Packing a bag made it seem more deliberate somehow. She pursed her lips. It would also allow her to be able to brush her teeth in the morning. And being a practical woman, that argument was the clincher. Quickly she gathered her clothes, then turned to set them on the bed while she looked for an overnight bag. She then froze, a scream held hostage in her throat. The clothes in her hands fluttered to the carpet as she stood transfixed at the sight. Carried back in time. Her kitchen. They'd been in her kitchen. She'd been so exhausted, dragging herself up the porch steps behind her walker. She hated that thing. She hated Rob for not helping her up the steps. But she'd managed on her own, and panting, stood inside the kitchen staring down at the old linoleum, trying to control the frantic knocking of her heart before she passed out.
"Bring in your mama's bag, son," he'd said, his tone ominously quiet. And quailing, Robbie had obeyed. She'd felt nauseous, wondering what the sick bastard had done to her son when she'd been in the hospital, unable to protect him.
Rob pulled her St. Rita statue from the bag the nurses had packed for her. They'd been so kind, the nurses, especially the two who understood, the efficient nurse Desmond and the younger, more emotional Susan Crenshaw. The St. Rita had been a gift from Susan. But he'd hated the statue, just like he hated her and anyone who showed her the smallest consideration. She'd expected it, braced herself for it, but still lunged at the statue as he held it above her head. He'd laughed brutally and brought her treasure down on the linoleum so hard that it shattered. It was more than a statue. It had been the physical embodiment of a dream. The dream that now lay in pieces on the floor. Caroline knelt on her bedroom carpet, picking up the pieces, turning them over and over.
"Caroline, what's taking you so long?" Max asked behind her.
She didn't move a muscle.
It was impossible. It simply couldn't be. Panic seized her in a vice, squeezing the air from her lungs. "Please, God, no."
The pleas rolled in her head, echoing.
"Don't let it be like before. Don't let it be him."
As Max stood watching her, he could feel the tension in her body, in every stiff line of her back as she knelt on the floor, hunched over.
"Caroline, what's wrong?"
When she didn't say a word, he felt her fear rise around him, and he dropped to one knee beside her. On the carpet before her lay a dozen pieces of broken pottery. Gingerly, he picked one up and saw the image of a male face, his countenance carefully composed in prayer. Another fragment proved to be his folded hands. One look at Caroline's face told him this was not a minor loss. Her expression was almost haunted, panic emanating from her eyes. In her hand, she clutched one of the fragments so hard, a little stream of blood oozed from where it had cut her hand. But she didn't even seem to notice. Gently, he took the fragment from her hand, and grimacing, pulled himself to his feet to get a wet cloth from the bathroom for her hand. When he returned, she was still frozen in the same position, her hand open, blood dripping. Fighting his own fear, Max grasped her shoulders and lifted her to her feet. She came easily, as if she were a poseable doll. He gently pushed her down to sit on the edge of the bed.
"Caroline," he urged, washing her hand.
He shook her shoulder a little harder than he normally might.
"Caroline, snap out of it."
He snapped his fingers in front of her face and she blinked. She didn't jerk to awareness as he'd hoped, but lifted her panicked eyes to him in slow motion.
"He broke it,"
she whispered.
"Who broke it?" he asked, wiping the dried blood from around the cut.
"Oh, God."
It was a faraway cry, keening and desperate. Holding his own fear in careful check, Max got up to get another wet cloth, this time covering her face with it, pressing it so that the cold water dripped down her neck and throat. It was a modified version of a pitcher of water in her face, and brought the knee-jerk reaction he'd been waiting for. Caroline. He tilted her face up, checking her eyes. Where were you? She closed her eyes and swallowed, clearly distressed.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Tell me what happened.
It's stupid. It must be stupid.
She sounded like she was convincing herself. A movement caught his eye, and Max whipped around to the source, his defenses immediately ready. He let out the breath he'd sucked in as the big orange cat leapt to the bed and sauntered across, sitting on Caroline's pillow as if he owned the place. Max rolled his eyes, embarrassed that her fear was causing him to expect monsters to leap from closets. He lowered himself to sit next to her. "He was your cat, honey," he said softly, and she looked over at the orange mutt, her expression a riot of emotions. "He must have knocked the statue off your nightstand. It's okay, really." She relaxed slightly.
"Oh, you're right. How silly of me."
But when she tried to get up, Max pressed her back down. "Wait. I want to know what made you practically go in a trance." He gently squeezed her thigh. "I want the truth, Caroline." Her face went pale as a ghost. Then she laughed, a little hysterically, and he felt a coldness wash over him.
"I don't know if I remember what the truth is anymore," she said cryptically.
Max folded his arms across his chest, trying to warm himself. "Try." She glanced up at him, then licked her lips nervously.
"I had a statue like this. A long time ago. It was important to me."
"Where did you get it?"
"It was a gift."
"Someone special gave it to you?" She nodded, her eyes closing.
"A young woman who was my friend for a short time."
He had the suspicion that he would have to pull every detail from the depths of her memory. "Where did you know her from?" Her eyes opened, and in them he saw a different fear. Not far away and buried. This was recent. This was now. Max felt his stomach clench, afraid to ask why she was still afraid, afraid he would not want to know the answer. She licked her lips again.
I told you that once I'd hurt my back.
Max nodded. And once you said you'd spent a lot of time in hospitals. Something flickered wildly in her eyes at that statement. How did you hurt your back, Caroline?
I fell down some stairs.
She'd told him that once before, and he'd believed her then. He didn't believe her now. Dread settled over him, heavy and terrible. He was missing something, something critical. He closed his eyes, mentally reviewing every stored memory, then remembering the way she'd wrenched backwards to avoid being touched that day he'd come across her unpacking that box in his office. She'd been afraid of him then. The pieces began to fit. It didn't hurt. He heard her whisper from the night before echo through his mind. He'd asked who hurt her. He'd meant, emotionally. She hadn't. Oh, God, she hadn't. No. His stomach violently churned. He had to swallow to keep from becoming ill, right there and then. But he'd asked for the truth. He opened his eyes, finding hers fixed on his face, still afraid. And in her eyes, he saw the truth no man could accept. She dropped her eyes and looked away. When? He asked, his voice ragged.
When did I fall down the stairs?
Max lurched to his feet, angry, furious. You fell? Did you walk into doors, too, Caroline? She winced at his tone and his condemnation, and he felt the fury change to shame in a wave that nearly knocked him over. He sunk back down on the bed and dropped his face into his hands.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way.
Her hand came to rest on his knee.
I know.
He shook his head. I don't know what to say. She sighed.
It was a long time ago, Max.
How long?
9 years, give or take.
Max pulled his hands down his face. What happened?
He was angry. He pushed me. I fell.
She stopped herself.
I ended up at the bottom of the cellar stairs.
With a broken back?
Yes.
He leaned over and picked up a fragment of the statue. And this? Caroline sighed again.
I met a wonderful young woman in the hospital. She was a volunteer that summer. We became friends. I'd never had a friend before. Not in my whole life,
she qualified, her voice wistful.
She knew. Somehow, she knew what had happened to me.
And?
And she gave me the statue as a, I don't know. She meant it as a symbol of friendship. To me, it became far more. The day I came home from the hospital, he broke her. My statue.
On purpose? Why? She shrugged.
It represented kindness. He hated anything that represented kindness, to me anyway. So when I came here, I bought myself another one.
She picked up the piece that was the man's head.
St. Joseph, the patron saint of social reform.
He looked down at her face, partially hidden by the fall of her hair as she bowed her head over the face of St. Joseph she held cradled in her hand. He couldn't think, couldn't feel. So that's why you chose to go to law school. Your own social reform.
Yes.
They sat in silence as the minutes ticked by. He was numb, unable to grasp the reality he'd heard from her own lips. Later, he'd be angry. Later, he'd fight the urge to find the bastard who raised his hand to her and kill him with his own hands. Later, he'd hold her and cherish her and tell her it would be all right. But for now, he was simply numb.
We need to be going, Max,
she said quietly.
Frank is depending on you.
He turned to stare at her, unbelieving. You expect me to... After... He gave up and looked at her helplessly. Caroline met his eyes with unflinching challenge.
I do. Every day of my life.
Max swallowed. He looked down at the floor where some of her clothes lay in a pile. What are those for?
I was planning to pack a bag so I could stay with you tonight.
She paused, then cleared her throat.
Should I put them away?
Max let his head drop backward, and he stared straight up at the ceiling. His throat was so tight he thought he might never draw an easy breath again. Do you think, he asked, his voice breaking and not giving a damn, that it matters?
Doesn't it?
He blinked, and the ceiling came back into clear focus. Of course it matters. He brought his gaze back down to meet hers. It matters because it happened to you. It matters because I love you. It matters, Caroline. You matter. You matter to me. He watched her eyes fill with tears and felt anguish stab at his heart to think that she thought he might walk away. He bracketed her jaws with hands that trembled. He ran his fingers up into her hair, cradling her head as he'd done during their lovemaking the night before. I love you. She turned her cheek into his palm, her body sagging in relief.
Then let's go. You've got a bunch of starstruck kids waiting to drool puddles on their Nikes.
She stood up and gathered her drop clothes from the floor. Caroline? She stopped, holding the clothes to her chest.
Yes?
Later, when we're done at this thing for Frank, I want to go back to my house and hear the whole story. She fumbled with the clothes.
Why?
Max stood and put his hands on her shoulders. He bent over and kissed her neck through her sweater.
Because I need to understand.
He tipped up her chin and gently kissed her mouth.
Because you matter to me.
Chicago, Saturday, March 17th, 10:30 a.m.
Can't you stay a little longer?
Winters paused from buttoning his cuffs to look down at the young body in the bed. He drudged up a winning smile.
Sorry, sweetheart. I have to work today. I'm already late for a toilet snake and a hot water heater installation.
In reality, he was furious with himself. He should have been at Mary Grace's apartment hours ago. He never, ever overslept. It must have been all the stress adding up. Evie pulled the sheet up to cover herself and sat up in the bed. She rubbed her temples.
Oh, I have one awful headache.
He was surprised she wasn't in the hospital. The girl could really put it away.
Try a few aspirin.
She nodded wearily.
Sounds like a plan. I don't want to be hung over when Dana gets home.
Winters' hands stopped abruptly. Recovering quickly, he slipped the last button through the hole.
Dana?
Evie pressed her fingertips into her eye sockets.
Dana Dupinsky. She's my roommate. She and Caroline are best friends. Dana's working nights this weekend. Oh, she'd be truly pissed to find me hung over with a man in my bed. I've got...
She squinted at the clock.
About a half hour to get myself together.
So Dana Dupinsky was her roommate. It truly was a small, small world. Perhaps he'd get a chance to extend his personal thanks to Ms. Dupinsky after all.
So what are you doing tonight, Evie?
She looked up, her eyes bloodshot.
I don't know. You want to do something?
Winters tucked his shirt into his pants.
I'll pick you up at 8.
Chapter 18. Raleigh, North Carolina, Saturday, March 17th, 2:45 p.m. Stephen's cell phone jangled just as he pulled his car into his driveway.
Thatcher.
Stephen, it's Tony.
She was breathless.
I just got your page. What do you have?
Where are you, Tony? He asked, getting out of his car.
Just got back from my run. Did you have any luck with Livermore?
Stephen pulled his briefcase from the back seat.
No, he answered with a grimace. Rodriguez had to give it up when Livermore's attorney shut down the interview. We didn't even chip through the surface. Livermore's one cold SOB. He didn't give a damn about any of those women or why Winters wanted them. It was a job, nothing more.
You order a psych profile?
Tony asked, her breathing calmer.
The DA's office will. Dime to dollar, they rule him a sociopath. No conscience whatsoever.
Stephen slammed his car door a good deal harder than he needed to.
Those guys give me the chills. Hey, Cindy Lou, he added, patting the shaggy head of the Thatcher family sheepdog.
Who's Cindy Lou?
Ross asked, mild amusement in her voice.
My dog. My youngest named her after Cindy Lou who was not more than 2.
Christmas gift, huh?
Stephen scowled as the dog drooled on his shoe. Christmas mistake. He raised his knee to Cindy Lou's chest just in time to protect his suit coat from 2 dirty paws the size of dinner plates.
You're a Grinch, Stephen,
Tony said, laughing.
I'm a man who likes clean clothing. Listen, I'm due at my son Matt's piano recital in 20 minutes, so I don't have a lot of time to talk right now. I just wanted to let you know I heard from Spinelli in Chicago. He sent a unit to Caroline Stewart's apartment this morning, but she wasn't home. Instead, they talked to a neighbor, an old man, who said Miss Stewart left with a man 30 minutes before the unit got there.
Don't tell me it was Rob, Stephen,
Tony said, her voice heavy with dread.
Please. Daddy!
A red blur tackled him around his legs, and Stephen scooped his youngest son up into his arms, trapping the cell phone between his shoulder and ear.
Hey, baby!
He smacked a loud kiss on Nicky's forehead, then hitched his boy up on his hip.
No, Tony, it wasn't Winters. It was some tall guy with a cane. Old guy said his name was Max.
Did Max have a last name?
Spinelli's men asked, but the old guy said he didn't pry into the affairs of his neighbors. Stevens snorted. Chicago PD said the old guy practically lives on the stoop. I wish he'd pushed himself to pry just this once. Tony sighed her relief.
Well, at least she has someone to take care of her. I'd hate to think of her duct taped to a bed in some sleazy motel.
Or at the bottom of a river. I gotta go, Tony. Call you later. Stephen hung up, slipped his phone back in his pocket, and swung a squealing Nikki up on his shoulders.
Daddy, what's at the bottom of the river?
Nikki asked, ducking as they passed through the front door. Stephen thought about Susan Crenshaw and the devastation Winters had left in his wake. A fresh wave of fear shook him as he thought of Winters sitting right in front of his house, mere inches from his precious baby. Then the fear became grim determination. No way in hell would that bastard touch his family. No way would his children live in fear. "Just that big granddad catfish that jumped off my hook last time we went fishing," he answered his son. He swung Nikki down from his shoulders and sat him on the third stair of the staircase so they were face to face. "What do you say after Matt's recital we all jump in the car and go fishing for the rest of the afternoon?" Nikki's smile beamed from among his freckles.
"Really?"
"Really." Stephen shoved all thoughts of Winters back as far as he could, which wasn't very far. But he made himself grin anyway. "I'm feeling lucky today." Nikki jumped to his feet.
"Lucky enough to catch old Granddad?"
Stephen reached out his arms, and Nikki jumped into him. "Luckier." He hugged Nikki tight. "Much luckier." Chicago, Saturday, March 17th, 3 p.m. Winters slammed the trunk of his rental car shut. Damned old man. Edelman simply couldn't leave well enough alone. He just had to go checking on 3A contractors, just had to meet him at the door, telling him there was no 3A contractors and he was going to the police, that he knew Winters had gone into Caroline's apartment when she wasn't home, that nobody messed with the women in his building, especially the ones with no men to take care of them like Caroline. Caroline. The name stuck in Winters' throat. She'd defied him, lied to him, run from him. She'd stolen his son and filled his young mind with lies, turned his own son against him. And now he knew she was unfaithful as well. She'd come back this morning with the gimp with the cane. She'd been out with him all night, the whore. And she'd left with him again at a little past 10 that morning, a small suitcase in her hand. Edelman had given him that much before he'd gasped his last. Winters fingered the rip in his coveralls. The old man had put up a surprising fight. There really hadn't been a place to hide him afterwards. Winters hadn't planned this. It was one of those immediate necessities of life. So for now, old man Edelman's resting place would have to be the trunk of his rental car. He wouldn't be able to keep the car for too much longer. There wasn't enough brute in the world to cover up that smell once it got kicking. Winters slid behind the wheel of his rental car and pulled it from the alley. Great hiding place, that alley. If it wasn't built just for hiding, it should have been. He wouldn't bother staying here today. Now that he knew Mary Grace had packed a bag, he knew she wouldn't be back until at least tomorrow. He looked up at the sky. The weatherman was forecasting rain for tomorrow. Today might be his last chance to get a clear view of Chicago from the top of the Sears Tower. He had plenty of time to kick back and be a tourist for a few hours. He wasn't meeting Evie until 8 o'clock. His agenda for the evening included working Evie's sympathies in the direction of Tom's father. He was fairly optimistic that everything would work out just fine. By tomorrow, he'd have Mary Grace in hand. Well in hand. By the time his son returned from his camping trip, Mary Grace would be more than willing to recant every lie she'd told over the years. By this time next week, they'd be a happy family again. Well, at least he and Robbie would be happy. Mary Grace would never know the meaning of happiness again. When he got her home to Asheville, Mary Grace would have to answer to charges of unlawful child seizure. Perhaps she'd even do time for kidnapping his son. No prison sentence would be long enough to make up for the 7 years of Robbie's life she'd stolen, but perhaps it'd be enough to put her back in her place for good. And if she didn't do time, he'd just have to put her in her place himself. He glanced down at his hand and watched his fingers curl into a fist. That would be a hardship, of course. The thought of putting Mary Grace in her place without killing her was becoming difficult. He pulled out into traffic, headed downtown. He should get an awesome view from the Sears Tower on a clear day like this one. Chicago, Saturday, March 17th, 5 p.m. Max checked his watch for the 10th time in as many minutes. Caroline had been in the restroom entirely too long. He was getting worried. In truth, he'd been worried all day, wrestling with his own feelings. Or lack thereof. He was still numb. Didn't know what to think or say. God, she'd been abused. Pushed down a flight of stairs and left to recover on her own. There was more, he knew. Everything that must have come before she was pushed, that had put those shadows in her eyes and made her flinch if he made any sudden moves. Max wanted to be angry. He wanted that cleansing burst of sheer fury. But he was just numb. And Caroline had been distant since they'd left her apartment that morning. Not once had she initiated anything. No conversation, no touching, certainly nothing more intimate. And the fact that he wanted her made him feel guilty. Well, he thought, guilt was something, an emotion, a place to start. But how could he take guilt for something he'd had no part in and turn it into something healthy? Something that would make Caroline heal? He was so unsure. Should he initiate something himself? Would she want him to touch her? He'd wondered through the morning, even as Frank's basketball skills workshop wound to a successful close. He'd agonized through the afternoon as he and Caroline had aimlessly driven around Chicago with no particular place to go. And now he was terrified as he sat across from the empty seat at the restaurant they'd happened into. Neither of them had chosen the place. Neither of them had chosen anything to eat, each taking the top item on the menu. He'd made no real choices today. He'd drifted. He was numb. His brain was jerked out of the mist when a woman with a familiar voice said from behind him,
"I don't need my own table, thank you. I'm with him."
Max found he wasn't the least bit surprised when Dana Dupinsky slid into the booth across from him and looked up at the waitress who'd evidently followed her from the front door.
"Could you bring me a glass of water with lemon, please?"
The waitress looked at Max, and he nodded. "She's with me." One corner of Dana's mouth quirked up sympathetically.
"So how's it going?"
she asked, pulling Caroline's plate closer to her. "Not bad," Max returned warily. Dana dunked a French fry into a cup filled with ketchup and carefully inspected her work.
"So she told you?"
she asked, then lifted her eyes to meet his. Max looked away, unable to come up with an answer to the unspoken question in her eyes. He nodded, incapable for the moment of any speech at all. His eyes scanned the far wall of the restaurant, looking for Caroline to emerge from the ladies' room.
"She won't be back for about 15 minutes,
Dana offered quietly. She laid her ketchup-soaked fry on the side of Caroline's plate untouched, then went to work dunking another one.
"She asked me to come and talk with you."
Max felt his whole face frown. "I didn't think we'd met here by pure happenstance," he replied, sarcasm making his words harsh.
"I didn't think you did. So what will you do now?"
He chanced to glance at her face. Her expression was cautious, her eyes sharp and businesslike. Sudden understanding dawned. Dana did more than run a shelter for runaways. Dana sheltered abused women as well. She counseled. She helped women pick up the pieces. Occasionally she must do the same for men. "She came to you," he said. "You helped her."
She came to me.
She confirmed, then countered with a tilt of her head.
She helped herself. So what will you do now, Max?
I don't know, he murmured. I don't have the first idea.
Then you'd permit me a suggestion or two?
By all means. How ludicrous, he thought, a wave of anger crashing through the numbness of his mind. They sat here exchanging pleasantries like the hellos of strangers on a crowded street when the real subject was... He swallowed and dropped his forehead into his hand. When the real subject was far too heinous and painful to consider. Dana dunked another French fry, and this time ate it, watching him as she chewed. I don't know what to say to her, he confessed. All day I've just been going through the motions, and then when I look at her... She nodded.
Go on. When you look at Caroline, what do you see?
Max looked up at the ceiling, over at the bar, out the window. Anywhere but into Dana's brown eyes that seemed to see more than he wanted to bear.
I see. He shrugged. I don't know. I know what I think I should see.
Dana smiled. An incredibly gentle smile that made him want to swear and cry at the same time. He did neither, and she gave him another.
Self-control. I admire that in a man. As long as it's within reason, of course. Max, what do you think you should see when you look at Caroline?
A strong woman who's survived. I should admire her. She lifted her brows.
But?
Max closed his eyes. But I don't see that. I see her lying at the bottom of those cellar stairs, broken and hurting. His lips trembled, and he pursed them. Scared.
I forget that imagination goes along with your chosen field. History,
she added when he opened his eyes to frown at her.
Evie tells me how you make her classes come alive. You couldn't do that if your mind didn't paint pictures. Sometimes those pictures can be liabilities.
Max laughed bitterly. Yeah, so what?
So you're right. She was lying on that cellar floor, broken and scared. Tom found her like that. He was the one to call 911.
Max winced, able to see that picture all too clearly as well. No wonder the boy acted like his mother's bodyguard. Dana's hand came to rest on his wrist, initiating a soothing human contact.
But she isn't there now. She isn't lying on any cellar floor.
One corner of her mouth turned up.
She doesn't even have a cellar floor anymore.
Max stared, stunned. How?
Can I joke about such things?
She finished.
Come on, Max. What's the alternative? Depression that eats at you until you wish you were dead? You want to know who taught me to laugh when I wanted to do violence to the bastard of a man who hurt her? Caroline did. She came into my life 7 years ago, when I'd already been divorced from my own abusive spouse for years. I'd gotten my degree in counseling to make a difference, but I was so discouraged. One day the old director of the house told me to pick up a new client. I met Caroline at the Greyhound station, frightened but determined, holding the hand of the bravest little boy I'd ever met. I haven't met any braver since. Tom drew that courage from his mother. Caroline taught me what true perseverance really meant, what true courage really meant. When I met her, she still wore a back brace and walked to the bus stop with a cane. Did you know that?
Max shook his head.
She worked in a warehouse, and she'd come home so tired. But she always had time for Tom. She'd tell him funny, cute little stories that kept him giggling long after she turned off his light. That was how she made it through. Indomitable will, the sense of humor of a troupe of vaudeville comics, and more courage than a platoon of soldiers. That's the woman she wants you to see. That's the woman she is.
How long did she stay with him?
The question came out before he could stop it, and he could only be grateful Caroline wasn't sitting here to hear it. Dana didn't flinch.
You'll need to ask her that question, Max. I will tell you that women stay with abusive men for many different reasons. Many of them were probably true for Caroline during the year she was with Rob.
Rob, a name to put with the virulent hatred that bubbled up from some dark corner of his heart. His hands clenched into fists.
Women stay with men for many reasons,
Dana continued, and Max watched as her eyes dropped to his fists. He immediately relaxed them, flattening his palms on the table. She lifted her eyes back to his and nodded.
They tend to leave for only a few.
They're children.
That's number one. In Caroline's case, there never was a time when a child didn't factor in.
She had Tom when she was 16, he remembered.
Yes.
Dana covered the back of his hand with her palm.
Max, you've told Caroline you love her. Is that true?
Max nodded, his throat constricting once again. Yes.
Then you'll need to realize first that this discovery isn't something you package all nice and neat and file away under E for experiences you care not to remember. Caroline is more than a former client. She's my best friend. I want her to have a normal life more than I want to breathe. If you're the right man for her, I'll support you in working through this. Get some counseling, but not one-on-one. Join a therapy group with other men whose wives or girlfriends have been abused. The others in the group will not allow you to feel sorry for yourself. Ever.
It was a suggestion he could live with. Okay.
And secondly, when you think about her lying bruised and broken and scared, picture her getting up and getting away, because that's what she's done.
She picked up another French fry and studied it intently as if she were weighing her next words with care.
And Max, don't fall into the trap of treating her like spun glass, especially when the situation is an intimate one.
She abandoned the French fry and slid from the booth.
It's the absolute worst thing you can do.
Chicago, Saturday, March 17th, 8 p.m. Sitting on the sofa where they'd made love not 24 hours before, Caroline watched Max kneel at the fireplace and poke at the kindling fire with the old poker that had belonged to his grandparents. There was proof of his family and their ongoing legacy everywhere she turned. It made telling him the whole truth even more daunting. She now had so much more to lose if he turned her away.
It's nice that we can have a fire this late in the year,
Caroline commented, more to break the silence than for any other reason. The silence during the day had been excruciating. They'd picked at their dinner when she'd returned from her 20-minute visit to the ladies' room. Dana had been there talking to Max. Caroline didn't even need to ask to know it was true. A, because Dana had promised she would, and B, because Caroline found mounds of ketchup-soaked French fries on her plate. Dana was a fry dunker, always had been, especially when she was nervous or agitated. Max had tried, really tried, but it was an incredible shock to a man like him, a man whose parents had loved one another and their children openly and without restraint. Caroline hesitated over telling him the rest. If he became so upset over the abuse she'd told him about that morning, how upset would he become when he heard the rest of the story, including the little matter of falsified documents and her ongoing marital status? Little problems, those. Max looked up from the fire. Yes, it is nice. I remember my grandmother letting us roast marshmallows over the fire way into the early summer. We'd make s'mores and drip the chocolate onto the floor. He ruefully looked down at the ancient carpet. I'm wishing now we'd been a little more careful with Grandma's things. He smiled, but it never really reached his eyes. Caroline smiled with him, then drew a deep breath and patted the space on the sofa next to her.
Come sit down, Max. We need to talk.
Slowly he pulled himself to his feet, using the cane to keep his balance. It's time. He met her eyes as he crossed the room, and in his, she saw real fear. But he sat down next to her nonetheless. I'm ready. Let's have it. Caroline reached up to caress the hard line of his jaw.
"It will change how you think about me,"
she began, and he abruptly grabbed her wrist, his eyes blazing. He didn't grab hard enough to hurt, but she was startled all the same.
"And for that alone, I want to kill the bastard that laid his hands on you. Does that change the way you think about me?"
Caroline blinked.
"I guess I never thought about it that way."
"Then do. This thing will change us both. I swear."
He dropped her wrist and looked away for a moment. She watched his throat work as he stared into the fire.
"I swear, Caroline,"
he whispered now, his voice breaking.
"I don't know if I'm strong enough to listen, then go on the way you have all this time. All day long I just wanted to..."
"Howl at the moon,"
Caroline suggested, feeling her own eyes sting. He looked back, his eyes tortured, but his mouth smiling.
"Yeah, something like that."
"Then do. Nobody's gonna hear you from miles and miles way out here in the country."
His smile dimmed.
"And I've also wondered if you weren't a little afraid of me. I'm a big man, and I live in a very isolated..."
Caroline reached up to cover his mouth, to stop the sentence before he finished it.
"No. The answer to that is no. Once when you startled me, I was afraid. But it was remembering that it was you and not him anymore that made it okay. I've never been afraid of you, Max. Never."
He closed his eyes as his shoulders sagged in relief.
"I've been so afraid to hear that answer."
"Do you have any more questions before I get started?"
He opened his eyes and rubbed his thumb against her lower lip.
"Yes. Last night, when we made love."
"It was the first time for me, Max,"
she whispered.
"All my life I heard people talk about how wonderful sex was. I never understood until I made love with you."
This time his smile made it to his eyes.
"That's what I needed to know."
Caroline drew a breath and settled back into the sofa and gave him a shaky smile.
"I'm not sure where to begin."
"How about at the beginning?"
Max lifted his arm, offering her a place to lay her head. Caroline nestled against him.
"That's what Dana always says." "Okay."
She paused and hoped for wisdom from above. None came, so she started at the beginning.
"Once upon a time, I was born to parents who didn't love each other, and they didn't love me. My father was an angry man with big fists who routinely beat my mother and me. I learned early that if he came home drunk, the best hiding place was under the front porch."
She shivered, remembering.
"It was dark and had snakes, but it was still better than what waited above."
His hand reached out to touch her cheek. She covered his fingers with her hand, holding his hand in place. It helped. Knowing he was there helped her tell the story she hoped she'd never have to remember again.
"When I was 15, I met one of the high school football players who took me to dinner. I didn't know anything about sex then. I didn't know what he'd try after telling me I was pretty and investing a full $1.50 in my hamburger and fries. I didn't even know I was pregnant with Tom until about 4 months later. My father, of course, was livid. He insisted Rob marry me. In those days, that's what you did. So I became a mama myself at 16, and a high school dropout, and a wife."
She sighed.
"And a punching bag."
She felt Max's body stiffen. She pressed a kiss into his palm that still cradled her cheek, then released his hand and rubbed his thigh.
"His name was Rob, and he hit when he drank. Or sometimes when the house wasn't clean enough, or dinner tasted bad. I found a women's clinic across the state line and visited whenever he did damage I couldn't fix."
Max's gulp was audible.
"Such as?"
"Oh, well, let's see,"
she answered, too lightly. She couldn't help the glibness. It was the only way she knew to cope.
"A few radial fractures from twisting my arm. Broken arms.
She closed her eyes and counted.
5, maybe 6 times. A broken leg or 2, maybe 3. Once he broke my jaw, and I had to have my teeth wired. That was an interesting one to explain away. Lots of broken ribs and bruises.
And burns and cuts, she thought. But those injuries were a lot harder to recount.
I tried to run away.
You did? She patted his thigh. His tone was one of cautious optimism, as if he'd wanted to ask if she'd tried to get away but had been afraid to do so.
I did. I found out when Tom was about 4 and a half that I was pregnant again. Rob was overjoyed. I was horrified. I didn't want to bring another person under Rob's control. More selfishly, I didn't want any more responsibility that would keep me from running away. I knew I had to get away before the new baby was born, or I'd be trapped until the baby was old enough to walk fast or know how to be quiet if I needed to escape. I waited and waited for the right opportunity, but it never came. My due date kept getting closer, so I finally just decided to do it, to run away. When I was about 6 months along, I scraped up as much money as I could and put Tom in the back seat and drove to my mother's house. My father had died by that point. I hoped she could spare a little money, just enough to feed Tom until I found help. That was a strategic error.
What happened? Caroline shook her head, the memory still so crystal clear.
She lectured me. Told me a wife's place was by her husband. That I should concentrate on being a better wife so Rob wouldn't be so mad at me all the time. And then?
She shook her head again, still unable to believe what happened next after all these years.
And then she called Rob.
What? She looked up at his stunned expression and shook her head.
I couldn't believe it either. I was in shock. Then I grabbed Tom and we ran.